This
is Mythical.
We're so excited to introduce you to Great Jones. Great Jones makes high-quality, thoughtfully designed cookware that's so stunning you won't want to put it away. From Dutch ovens to ceramic dishes to non-stick sheet pans, they've got you covered.
Heck yeah, they do. Their products come in a variety of amazing colors, from classic black and white to pinks, greens, yellows, and blues. And the best part, Nicole, everything's non-toxic.
Josh, I've been in the market for a kettle for months.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about it a weird amount.
Yeah, I've bought like a bunch, returned a bunch, but I just got my hands on the Great Jones Fellow Kettle collab, and I got it in the color broccoli, and I'm so excited to make artisanal teas and coffees. I'm trying to get on my coffee game right now, and I'm so excited to use a gooseneck kettle. We have no idea.
I'm excited to use their yellow hot dish, aka casserole dish. Shout out to Minnesota and Fargo, North Dakota. I'm at that point in my life where I'm like, I'm an adult, I should have nice vessels to serve food out of.
Sure, fair.
Instead of just serving it on like stainless steel restaurant style things. And I like it. It's cute. It's got a good design. Bakes really well. Holds heat. I'm in, baby. And once you try Great Jones, you'll want to share it with friends. They make stunning gifts that are actually useful. Weddings, housewarming parties, birthdays, it's the perfect gift for the foodie in your life.
So upgrade your kitchen and replace those old, rusted hand-me-downs with bold, beautiful, long-lasting pieces from Great Jones. Get started today at greatjones.com and get an extra 15% off your first order with promo code SANDWICH. That's greatjones.com, promo code SANDWICH.
All fish is a scam, Nicole. Nothing is what you think it is.
What are you talking about?
The perch is catfish, the escalar is albacore, the calamari are pig buttholes.
Your pig butthole.
This is a hot dog is a sandwich.
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What? Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog's Your Sandwich. I'm your host, Pig Butthole.
And I'm Pig Butthole.
And today, we are dispelling the myth that calamari are not, in fact, squid, but are actually pig anuses.
I don't think that's true.
Here's the thing.
I think that's a lie.
How much profit really is there in the calamari industry? That's what I'm saying.
I'm sure there's tons.
Yeah, but if there were, like, calamari-only restaurants, if it was, like, Buffalo Wild Squid out there dominating the game, then I'd be like, there would be an impetus to shave profit margins. Mm-hmm. But if you really think that, like, the Olive Garden is skimming profits...
Well,
by
I'm
finding
sure
a supplier
are.
Of pig intestines? No, they're skimming profits on everything else.
But they're
also just giving away free bowls of pasta after you've already had pasta.
I've always wanted to try the never-ending pasta bowl, actually.
It is. After 2.5 bowls of pasta, you really don't want to be there.
You really don't know my life.
I don't know, Nicole. Do you know the Olive Garden doesn't salt their pasta water?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Did you know that?
No, today we are talking about... Are sushi restaurants scamming you? And before we really get into it...
This is so silly.
I know. It's silly, but no, there's a lot of really, really interesting stuff to get into here revolving fish mislabeling and who are actually opening sushi bars and why in America and the history of it.
But is it fair to say are sushi restaurants scamming you, or is it just all restaurants that serve fish are scamming you?
Okay, that's a great point. I want to preface this by saying... Almost anything you buy is some sort of a scam.
Okay.
Right? No, we enter into the social contract. We enter into a social contract.
Okay, when we go to a restaurant.
When you go to a restaurant, that you are like paying for things simply because you like them, not because there is an intrinsic value associated with them. Right? Do you know what I mean?
Of course there's intrinsic value in food.
Like, even if it was pig butthole, if you are enjoying the pig butthole as much as you would squid...
Do you think
if you don't eat pig, if you're a practicing Jew or Muslim, I get it.
My question is the pig butthole. Do they like, because the texture of pig butthole, it takes a long time for it to get soft.
No, you got to just baking soda treat it.
You think so?
I think if you baking soda treat it and then I've gone to some like pig intestine specialist, Kopchang, like the Korean.
Okay.
We went to Agassi Kopchang.
Is that an intestine specialist?
Yeah, Kopchang
I
means
did not know
intestines.
That.
And when they're done right, they're very delicious, but I've also had some dirty intestines and you feel the poop. You do, there's... poop.
Oh my god, what do you mean you feel the
poop?
It's
like a gusher. I've been to some it was just like a real crappy restaurant that was serving intestines.
No pun intended.
If you're going
to
eat intestines, go to an intestine specialist. Go to somebody who's been doing it right for many, many years. The calamari pig butthole thing, I believe, is a myth. I don't think that was ever substantiated.
There's no way in hell that they're doing that. And if they're doing that, shame on you.
if you get calamari, that's just make sure that it's the type that they serve with the tentacles, because you can't fake that. They're not just fraying the buttholes into tentacles, right?
You know what they might do if they're really scummy? The rings are buttholes, and then in order, if they have like smart diners, they put some tentacles there. Maybe. That's like a really scummy thing to do. So it's like, oh yeah, well, I'm checking, you know?
What we are talking about today is the fact that a ton of fish is mislabeled. That's in America, true. And also the term sushi grade does not mean anything.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That was the impetus behind this whole podcast, is because people were like, that better be sushi grade fish that I was eating raw, and sushi and sashimi grade are literally not legally protected at all.
I think people just slap it on there to sell it, right?
100%. Yeah. So there's actually this really incredible quote by, he was a fish shop owner in Brooklyn. His name is Yuji Haraguchi, Brooklyn-based Osakana. He just says he used the term sushi and sashimi grade for marketing purposes when he worked as a sales rep for a whole fish or for a wholesale fish distributor.
Okay.
He said back in 2004, the company was trying to expand its customer base beyond Japanese restaurants, and Haraguchi's mission was to convince other restaurants to serve their customers raw fish besides tuna. The term sushi grade fish was very effective in terms of making sales, but at the same time, I had to provide the right product and the right information, he says.
Sure,
so
fair.
It's one of those things where you go to a sushi bar and you sort of assume that they are using higher quality fish than you would get at home. Go ahead.
You say sushi bar, not sushi restaurant. Why is that?
Do you not say sushi bar?
I say
people
sushi
at home?
I say let's go get sushi.
Well, that
bar implies bar stools.
Yeah, but every sushi restaurant has a bar inside of it.
Can we get a fact check on that?
Okay, so this is a great point. In Japan, sushi restaurants are more just a sushi bar.
Fair.
It is a counter
that
you go to eat sushi. And the difference in Japanese and American cultures when it comes to raw fish is really, really going to come into play here.
Okay.
Right?
I just had to interrupt you. Continue your story.
So the history of sushi, they believe it dates back about 1,000 years. And there's an old wives' tale that is not substantiated at all, but it kind of rules. It's like a woman wandered up to an osprey's nest.
Osprey, a bird.
An osprey, And like she had a clay pot of rice in an osprey nest or something, and the rice was fermenting, and the osprey dropped fish in there, and she was like, yum, and ate it. And that kind of doesn't make sense, but it's a fun Japanese old wives' tale.
Cute.
But no, people have been eating like fermented fish in rice as a method of preserving it in clay pots.
Yeah.
Throughout East Asia for 1,000 years.
Now, this is interesting. Fermented fish. Now, people don't normally associate fermented fish with sushi.
They sure do not.
But that's how it was, right? That's how the OG way was to eat it.
Correct, yeah. And that's where like the origins of like the etymology of sushi in Japan come from, right? Mm-hmm. But if you want to get back to like modern day sushi, a lot of people credit it to the late Edo period. Edo period was like 1600 to like mid 1800s. Mm-hmm. And so in 1830s, they say that the first like modern-ish sushi bar, which is old as hell, right?
Yeah, it is.
There wasn't no hamburgers for another like 80 years after that. Like this is pretty damn, you know, old in comparison to a lot
of
American foods. But Edo-style sushi, the fish isn't technically like fermented, but it is typically some sort of vinegar cured. And I've been to some Edo-style omakase restaurants. Omakase means
as you please. As the chef pleases. Whatever the chef says.
Or like, I'm in your hand. The chef's going to make you whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
An omakase meal. And I've been to an Edo-style omakase meal, and it was fantastic. The fish
was just like cute.
This is a cue,
Yeah,
where I accidentally went on like a third date and spent $1,000.
You spent $1,000 on a third date?
Any money. She ordered a $300 bottle of wine, and I didn't know how to say no thank you. She was mistaken. And
then she was also $1,000 on a third date.
We got in a fight too. It was bad.
At the restaurant?
No, after.
Okay, good.
You're ignoring me. I don't have to tell you, I was talking. So, what I'm saying is, 1830s, modern, like, nigiri is sort of invented.
I'm sure.
So, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Dude, I had, like, no money. I was broke, too. It was when I was living in Glendale with two other dudes.
I remember.
Weird times in both of our lives. So, anyways.
Okay.
1830s, modern nigiri sushi that we think of, which is sliced raw fish on rice.
Sure.
Could be treated with vinegar, but the
rarely.
Person,
I feel like in LA or, like, the U.S., not that common.
No, true. But a lot of times in preparation, the fish can be salted, it can be cured, whatever. But a lot of it is basically like, hey, now we're just taking fish and we're slicing them fresh and we're putting them on rice.
Which I love.
Which you love. I love it too. I have to preface this with like, I don't care if fish is mislabeled. I don't care that a vast majority of sushi restaurants in America are not owned or operated by a Japanese person.
I don't care.
Who cares about that? Give me tasty fish on rice and a cold beer, and I'm having a great time, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
First sushi restaurant in America, Kawafuku in Little Tokyo, LA.
Is it still open?
No, it shuttered like many decades ago. But this is 1966. And also,
first sushi restaurant in the U.S. was 1966.
1966, actually, okay. From a former imperial court chef from Japan, opened it with a Jewish business partner.
I love America.
I love America.
For reasons such as that.
Like, honestly. And so 1966, that happens. And all this cultural context really does come into play because during the 80s, especially, mm-hmm. 80s and early 90s, we see this, what I call the sexy sushi boom in America.
Sure. You've spoken about this before.
The sexy sushi movement, it's like early 90s. Think like Sunset Strip, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Guns N' Roses is playing. You just hit big on the stock market and junk bonds. And you want to take your gal out on a night on the town. You go to the Roxy Theater. You see Slash all, you know, drugged up out there. You go to Dorsia.
Eat the uni. Yeah.
You like, you know, he like throws a chair through the window. Then you go to what's it called? A katana sushi or something.
Yeah, I know, all about katana.
So sushi had this really big explosion. And culturally in America, we had this both Japanophobia and Japanophilia happening.
Yeah, I understand the Japanophilia, not so much the Japanophobia.
Well, so the phobia was simply like, the Japanese people are too good at manufacturing electronics and cars.
Okay, right? That makes sense.
And like they must
not be valid though.
No, I mean, like, listen, Japan had, like, a great economic rise post-World War II. And also, one of the reasons there weren't enough Japanese people in America to open sushi bars for the demand is because wages were really high in Japan and not that many
people wanted to go, right?
Yeah. So you had a lot of Chinese and Korean immigrants in especially Los Angeles opening sushi restaurants.
Yeah, some of my favorite joints are owned by Korean people.
I love it. I love getting a side of kimchi with my like California roll with fried shrimp and spicy mayo on it.
Yep,
it's
yep,
like
yep.
truly one of my favorite things and one of those things that makes LA what it is and how much I love it.
Yeah.
So anyways, there was this kind of attitude that like the Japanese people must be doing something culturally that we don't understand, and in came this sort of Orientalism and fetishization mm-hmm. of all Japanese culture where it's like, well, they're very respectful to their elders and they, you know, have the shokunin, like the artisanal master, and there's almost this like religiosity to it. And we have put that into sushi, where in America
of
we're like
things.
Sushi is sacred because I'm paying, if you go to an omakase restaurant, I'm paying $200 for it, and so every single thing this sushi chef does is intentional.
It's right
from the way, and it's right.
Yeah, yeah,
and there's wrong ways to eat sushi. No, you never dip it rice side down.
Yeah,
you never
put
the wasabi in this.
Don't rub your chopsticks together.
Exactly.
All that stuff.
And so we have this sort of like vaunted idea of what mm-hmm. sushi should be. Mm-hmm. And in actuality, in Japan, it is not treated as such. Like we see Jiro dreams of sushi.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say right now. I'm like, they really do revere it highly, don't they?
Because we've seen Jiro Dreams of Sushi. And neither of us have ever been to a sushi bar in Japan.
No, we should go.
Right? Well, I would love to go.
Okay.
And this is all actually written about in a fantastic book by Sasha Isenberg called mm-hmm. The Sushi Economy. He says, all the religious connotations about sushi that Americans project are simply a form of Orientalism. And he goes in to talk about how eating sushi in Japan, he's like, it's a big, boisterous atmosphere. Like, he likens sushi chefs more like a bartender or like a barber, where like you're shooting the crap with them. You're shooting the crap, you know the old saying.
Okay.
Where in America, a lot of people are like, oh, this is a very special experience.
It's serious, yeah.
It's very serious and it's very almost solemn in a lot of ways. And so we start to think of things like, oh, all the fish that they're using, these must be the most pristine product because we don't eat fish raw in America. But if this Japanese person, who again is probably not Japanese, not that that matters whatsoever, but it's, we don't have the same thoughts necessarily about Chinese or Korean culture that we do with Japanese culture, and when I say we, I mean a lot of white Americans,
the collective
right?
white American, yeah.
The collective white American
yeah.
That is represented by this one white dude sitting right here.
Now, how does that feed into our sushi restaurant scamming you?
That's a great question, Nicole, because somebody did a study. It was actually a group called Oceana. They're an ocean preservation group.
Are these the people that snuck the whale meat?
Oh my God, are they? I don't think it's the same people.
No, different people?
I don't know.
Okay.
But anyways, they found, and this is actually the lowest figure that I've seen because there have been so many studies about fish mislabeling, mm-hmm. Quote, that 1 in 5 seafood samples tested worldwide.
Turds, whoops.
Excuse me.
One in five seafood samples tested worldwide turns out to be a completely different species than what the menu packaging says.
One out of five?
And so,
shut up.
One out of five. And when I first heard this, I was like, well, there's not a lot of scientific delineation about like what makes a certain fish a certain fish.
Huh. Okay.
So the best example of this is Patagonian toothfish.
You mean
Chilean sea bass, baby. And so again, this isn't sushi restaurant scamming you. This is any restaurant that serves fish and an entire large fishing industry.
It's, yeah, I feel like it's the industry. So, it's not the guy behind the counter.
Yeah, so if there's a garbage fish that is ugly and has an ugly name that you want to sell, you just name it very similarly to another fish. So you have Mediterranean sea bass, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or what?
Just sea bass.
Just sea bass, right? Or Branzino, right?
Is Branzino sea bass?
Branzino sea bass. And it's a Mediterranean sea bass. And so you have that. And so then, you know, fishermen in Chile are like, yo, we got this big fish that gives a lot of meat, easy to fish, called Patagonian toothfish. Big, ugly looking mother effer, right? Nobody wants to buy it though, because it's called nobody knows what Patagonia is. Americans are ignorant.
Everybody knows what Patagonia is, the sweaters.
Do you know what Patagonia actually is?
Yeah, I do.
What's Patagonia?
It's in Peru.
Dang it. No, it's not. It's like southern Argentina, right?
What?
I mean, Chile is also certainly represented in Patagonia. Patagonia is a large region.
Does it include Peru?
Of South America.
Does it include Peru?
Peru is certainly not.
I need to know if it includes Peru.
No, Peru is definitely more north than Patagonia,
right? I need to know before you make me look dumb on this podcast.
Patagonia, Peru part of it?
Oh, man, there's no Peru. Just Chile. Why
and
did
Argentina.
I think it was Peru?
But the point is, there's this fish and nobody wanted to buy, and so they renamed it something. And so Patagonian toothfish is not a bass, has nothing to do with sea bass, but it's labeled a bass. But there's no actual protection on what is a bass and what is not.
And
a lot of these things...
Uh-huh, go ahead. No, please.
A lot of these things don't necessarily cross cultures, too. So in Japan, there's certain things that, like, they have their own names for fish. Obviously, in Japan, they don't use the English names for fish.
Yeah.
So they may not have the same delineation, such as this is a bass and this is a bass. They're like, we got our own Japanese names for this because we're in Japan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so with all of the fish mislabeling, one, you're likely paying more money for a worse fish, right? They tend to not to mislabel.
What does worse fish mean?
Well, that's a great point. A fish that at market price would not be at the price you paid for it.
Okay.
I agree with you, though, that I've eaten a lot of fish around the world. Most of it tastes really freaking similar.
I mean, I
will never pay
$30
for a halibut. That's insane.
Like a
halibut's not
cooked?
That good. Cooked or raw. Do you eat halibut? Yeah, you can eat halibut raw.
I've had halibut raw before.
Is it worth the markup over any other fish?
No.
But
what I'm saying is, like, there has to be a difference between, like, a firm white fish and, like, a...
There's differences, but not in... You don't see this any other place in the meat industry, right? I guess you do, and you can talk about... I was going to say, there's not, like, a competing animal to a cow that you can sort of, like, pass, you know, beef off as.
Yeah, fair.
You can mislabel. Here's another point.
Go ahead.
God dang it. USDA, right?
I was just about to bring up the whole USDA prime choice, whatever. Is that...
Correct.
There's none of that for fish, is there?
There's none of that for fish.
There should be.
And so the USDA...
What the heck?
This is a great thing that I only found out from watching the Netflix documentary Poisoned, as Nicole puts on lip gloss.
I do not want to see that.
You should watch Poisoned. It's really interesting.
No, is it like Food, Inc.?
It's all about food safety. Yeah, it's kind of like Food, Inc.
No,
it's all about food safety in the E. coli outbreaks, the Jack in the Box, which I remember in the 90s.
Okay.
But the most interesting thing I found out, they're interviewing two people from the FDA and USDA. And then they go to the USDA person. They say, what do you regulate in America? And they go, we regulate all beef, poultry, and catfish. And then the FDA is like, we do everything else. And I was like, hold up. Why catfish? Then I learned why. So the U.S. catfishing industry, which is a lot in like Arkansas, Mississippi Delta, that area, right? Catfish is a fresh river fish.
Not kosher.
Not kosher, but delicious. Big in the South, big also in Vietnamese food.
Sure.
It's a lovely dish called banh canh. That is a delicious catfish soup. Sometimes they call it Vietnamese gumbo. Anywho, there's now a huge infiltration of Vietnamese farmed catfish coming to the American market. And American suppliers don't like that. So they thought that the one thing they can beat this imported fish from Vietnam from is, is like standard safety and regulation.
Wow. Is it and, because so many, it's because so many Americans' livelihoods are based off of catfishing?
Exactly. It's very much just like a protectionist sort of policy, right? Which America's been doing for a lot of years. And again, I have like nothing against fish being imported from wherever. I tend to eat a lot. But one of the main culprits in the fish labeling scandal is farmed catfish coming from Asia because it's packaged somewhere that's not in America.
Okay.
And then they found out that catfish farmed in Asia was mislabeled with 18 different fish species. They're just passing catfish off as anything.
Do you think it's like different parts of the catfish?
Probably.
It's like the tail is more tender. So let's say that this is a,
this is Escalar. This is whatever.
Oh my God. Orange Ruffy.
That's
really crazy.
Sure.
18?
18. That was the biggest find from this study.
I couldn't name 18 fish if you paid me.
And so a lot of the fish mislabeling stuff, you know, me as somebody who I have no dietary restrictions, I have no allergies, no religious exemptions from anything, right? I don't care very much because I just love going to sushi restaurants in any fish restaurant and just shoving fish in my gullet.
Yeah, I ball out at sushi places too.
So for me, it's
I'll eat whatever.
It's whatever. But if you are, say, pregnant, there are fish that pregnant women are not supposed to eat because of high mercury content.
Oh, yeah. Which ones are those?
I don't know. What you? No, I can't. Like if I just
not pregnant,
saying,
Josh.
You haven't been drinking.
Everybody at work wants me to be pregnant so bad, but I'm not. I'm sorry. So, I'm sorry to let you guys down. Not yet.
So that's one of the things. Fish, and then you can't eat catfish, Nicole. Jewish. You're not going to get into Jewish heaven if you accidentally eat catfish that was mislabeled.
I have a friend who's OBGYN. She's pregnant right now. Said, yeah, go ahead. Eat raw fish just as long as it's from a good place.
I agree with that. Can I explain why I should be able to have opinions about your pregnancy?
Mine in particular?
Health? Yeah.
Just mine, though.
Correct.
No one else.
No, everybody. I think I should be sort of the main advice giver for anyone who's pregnant.
Just imagine me. I tell you, I'm pregnant. Now, what are you going to tell me?
So the whole thing about pregnancy, right? Do I know what it is or how it happens? Not
pregnancy?
Even a little bit.
I'm going to give you a hint. Come here.
Yeah. You have to put that in where? No. This is, okay. The reason you're not supposed to eat things when you're pregnant, it's basically just all the things that you're also not supposed to eat when you're not pregnant. If you want to minimize risk. If you want to minimize risk of food safety infections.
You can eat Capicola.
No, but deli meats have a like high percentage of Listeria cases, right?
Yeah,
that's like what this is all about. It's just like, hey, don't put
and
yourself
like raw cheeses and stuff.
Yeah, you're at risk for any other infection. Sort of infection, and you got a little thing growing inside your tummy. The tummy is the anatomical region where the seed grows,
hangs out.
But no, that's what it is, and so it's all about trying to minimize risk of food infection.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Well, is there a high... Well, with raw fish, is there a high infection rate?
I'm so glad you asked, Nicole, because...
this is fun.
Because the main thing... So this is now we're getting into sushi grade and sashimi grade.
Which is a lie.
Which is an absolute lie, right? FDA has released guidelines on fish when it is safe to be consumed raw. And this is not freshwater fish, because freshwater fish have a high degree of bacteria and... Or not bacteria, parasites are the main issue.
So, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Is there a lot of instances where wild and farm-raised salmon are kind of, like, mislabeled? Does that happen often?
Oh, that happens almost all the
That's
time.
That's really annoying.
Yeah, yeah. Which I don't even know what's better for the environment or myself anymore. I don't care.
I was told that farm is bad because they dye the fish. And then the dye makes the kids go crazy.
Listen, life is really complicated. I have no idea. I just eat the fish. Like, I go to a fish and I eat the fish. I go, hey, can I consume you? It goes, blah, 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 and I eat it. But
I'm happy you asked permission of the fish.
Yeah, animal sovereignty. I believe in it. So, parasites are the biggest risk when it comes to eating raw fish. Mm-hmm. That's what people always get worried about, right?
Sure.
They're bad raw fish. You're going to get parasites. And the Anisakis worm, which that just sounds like the Greek hammer thrower,
okay.
Mikhail Anisakis.
Okay.
But the Anisakis worm is the biggest risk okay. for that. America, we eat such little raw fish, especially in our homes, mm-hmm. that there were hardly any documented cases of this. There were 13 cases in the last 24 years
okay.
on Anisakis worms. And part
Not
of that
bad.
Is when we talk about sushi grade and sashimi grade, the FDA released guidelines that are like, there might be parasites in everything. Just like, just freeze it. Just freeze it. It'll kill all the parasites and that's it. And so almost like, all fish is now just deep frozen as a means
yeah.
of like, okay, FDA, you want to put out a blanket statement? We're going to freeze everything.
You know what's so funny? I actually saw a TikTok about people eating frozen Costco sushi.
Yes.
Did you see this too?
Yes.
And then everyone's like, that's not sushi grade.
There is a warrior out there among us on TikTok.
Yeah.
I can't remember their handle. Meg, if you want to find him, who is literally just taking Costco salmon and going, here's how I make my Costco salmon sashimi.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly safe.
It's an uproar. People were so upset.
And so when you're talking about like, you know, as long as the fish is from a good quality place, there's no such thing. And again, 13 cases of Anisakis worm. There are, I'm sure, other risks out there to eating raw fish.
Oh, we found it. Okay, this is... Photogami.
Yeah.
Photogami. Thank you.
$30
for-
Costco salmon. Shout out to Photogami out
Thank
there.
Thank you, Photogami.
But yeah, so your risk of getting any sort of foodborne illness or parasite from raw fish is so, so much less than like eating lettuce. Nicole, okay, pregnant people. Pregnant people out there, stop eating bagged lettuce. Bagged lettuce, look this up. It is literally like one of the least safe foods to consume in America. There are always listeria outbreaks. There's
Even
salmonella
the triple
outbreaks.
Wash?
There's E. coli. Washing it does nothing. This is another point. Washing it does nothing. What do you think? Bacteria just doesn't survive in water. Bacteria loves wet ingredients. It doesn't just like ride away on a wave. No, the only way to kill bacteria is through temperature change. Right? And so heat and
are
cold.
Are you telling people?
Which would destroy the lettuce. So
yeah.
That's one of the reasons E. coli is now more common in lettuce than it is in beef.
So are you telling people to freeze their lettuce or to cook their lettuce?
Both. I just asked you earlier if I can braise red...
I thought you were just saying that for kicks and giggles.
No, I have like spinach at home that I was going to saute, but spinach wilts down to nothing. And I was like, I can cut it with other greens. The only other green I have is red leaf lettuce. And I don't know, I might do that. And okay. It'll kill bacteria. But okay. Another point. When it comes to raw fish.
Yeah.
Ceviche. People okay. are like, the lemon cooks the fish.
It does.
Does nothing.
Are you kidding
the
me?
The main concern with eating
Are
raw fish, the
acid,
main concern,
acid
preserve, it can preserve
okay,
it.
Okay, wait, acid, wait.
It can
wait.
Preserve it. So, go ahead.
Me? So, whenever you have acid,
yeah.
And, okay, so this is going to be make a really dark turn. Mm-hmm. But you know how people, like, they pour acid on people?
Jesus
like when they
Christ.
Do something
oh my, are you talking about, like acid attacks against
yeah.
women? And
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So, like, it, like.
Stop doing that.
Like. Don't eat capicola when you're pregnant, and don't kill people with acid attacks.
I think you should eat capicola when you're pregnant, though. But don't do the second one. Go ahead. You were talking about acid.
It's like, doesn't that like, it like cooks the skin,
But
right?
acid is like, those. That is like acid like meant to harm people. Like lemon
There's
juice is acid.
Degrees.
Ceviche
That's,
is lemon,
okay,
is lime
okay,
juice.
Okay, okay. So, ceviche.
Where are you going
okay,
with this?
Wait, so.
You're saying like acid bad for life.
No. Listen
okay.
to me. So it's like saying a match and like a forest fire is to lemon juice as is acid.
To battery acid. Yeah. Yeah. Don't make battery acid ceviche. And
don't, you know, light a cigarette with a forest fire.
Correct mundo. Yeah, you're right.
Everything is
Although I did do that sometimes with just a home
fire?
Gas burner.
Oh.
Just it's in your mouth. And you just go.
Yeah, that's
gas
how you singe your eyelashes.
Yeah,
I've been there, done that.
College, man. But no. So if the main concern behind eating raw fish is parasites, okay. which it seems to be.
Uh-huh.
The Anisakis worm, and that's the main parasite that you find in fish, it thrives in acidic environments. So it would do nothing. But again, 13 cases in 24 years in America.
So wait a second.
What the acid does is you can eat it over a long period of time. So say you want to enjoy your fish 3 days from now without it getting the normal amount of bacteria that would build up on any sort of fresh, wet product. Acid will help preserve it.
So this, so you're trying to tell me that the malic acid or the citric acid in a lime or lemon does not cook the fish in ceviche?
It's an etymological and semantic debate, right, on what the term cook means. You know, acid, it'll structure the proteins in a way that is similar to it being heat treated. However, when it comes to bacteria, it does, or not even bacteria, when it comes to things like parasites that will get killed by cooking.
It will not kill it.
It will not kill it in terms of, curing with acid.
Unless you freeze the fish beforehand.
Freezing the fish to negative 31 degrees, which a home freezer cannot do, is what the FDA recommends to avoid parasites.
Then how are people supposed to enjoy sushi and ceviche at home?
Enjoy it. Do it. 13 cases in 24 years. I know sometimes I can be, listen to me. Just please listen. Pregnant people. Everybody
I don't
also
have to listen
because
I'm not pregnant.
I know people have gotten mad at me about being cavalier on certain food safety issues, such as cooking a chicken breast to 155 degrees instead of 165.
Oh my God. But get me out of here. Please get me out
of here. Look at the science and the numbers. Bag lettuce is out here murking people. 27 people died from cantaloupes. Lunch meat, hot dogs.
I love cantaloupes.
Yeah, oh man, the cantaloupe disaster in like, what was that, 2014 or something like that? It's utterly insane. There's so many things that are outside of your control in food safety. The things that you can control, like don't wash your chicken to spread salmonella around, you know, your kitchen. Like wash your hands often. But when it comes to fish, 13 cases in 24 years.
That's nuts.
Chicken. Undercooking your chicken by 10 degrees, all it has to do is stay at that temperature for 17 seconds to kill all the salmonella. These are things that are documented by science.
I had one question. You cook a chicken breast
to 155, Nicole, 17 seconds.
Okay, I have one question. Why sometimes when I eat sushi, my tummy hurt?
I don't know. How much sushi are you eating?
Honestly, me? Once a week. Is that too much?
I don't know. Your stomach also hurts when you eat Zenku chicken. Your stomach also hurts when you eat cheese, dude. Your stomach hurts all the time. That's another point. Sometimes we eat like certain things and we attribute us feeling crappy to that.
Aww.
It might be stress.
Aww.
You know what I mean?
I guess hot girls really do have IBS.
I get bad farts when I eat a steak. But that's because methane buildup.
And bananas.
So in conclusion, there are scams abound to be seen within sushi restaurants,
right? That's right.
Fish is always mislabeled. Sushi and sashimi grade are not real things. Again, I don't consider this scamming people, but a majority of sushi restaurants in America are not owned by anybody Japanese. And none of that matters whatsoever.
It really doesn't matter.
None of that matters.
Enjoy your life. Eat the raw fish. Have a spoonful of spicy tuna. Have a sake. Live your life.
Spicy tuna tends to be the meat that's stuck to the tuna spine, and they just take a knife and they scrape it off to get more out there. And
favorite.
It is great, and it's a delight. Food is not a thing that should be feared. Food is a thing that should be enjoyed.
Okay, I got another one. Spicy tuna is to sushi as bulgogi is to Korean barbecue.
Yeah, now we're getting analogies.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, Nicole.
Hi.
We've heard what you and I have to say. Now it's time to find out what other wacky ideas are rattling out there in the universe. Well, it's time for a segment we call...
Opinions are like casseroles!
All right, y'all, before we get to your opinions, we want to check in on the poll we posted on our Spotify page. It's poll dance time, Nicole.
Ready.
If you feel so inclined, you can do your best poll dance while we review the poll. We asked y'all,
I'm starting.
Okay, well, anyways, we asked you, do you think aliens are real? And 74.4% of you said, hell yeah. And then 25.6 said, I'm with Josh on this one. I don't think, like, they probably exist, but they're not, like... Well, we consider aliens. Also, like, unidentified flying, it's such a vague term.
I'm unidentified, and I'm a flying object.
I'm an unidentified voguing object.
Oh, my pinky!
Guys, we've had now 0 days since the last voguing accident in the Mythical Kitchen. Can we change the sign, please? Change the sign? Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Nicole needs medical attention. All right, Maggie, play that first opinion.
Crash singles are disgusting. Come at me, bro.
This opinion is disgusting.
The...
I love Kraft Singles.
Wait, hold on. Did they raise a good point?
If Martha Stewart's one of her favorite snacks in the world is a single Kraft Single straight out the fridge, it's not disgusting.
Well, let's. I don't know that Martha Stewart should be our guideline. I love Martha Stewart. I just don't know
she's
that, like,
perfect.
Anything Martha Stewart does, like, if
she
Martha
made a
Stewart
mistake.
Does X, ergo X is good. I don't know that. That's
I never
a good
said
framework.
That. I never said
we
that.
We talk about not idolizing celebrities, not deifying them.
Exactly.
And here we are deifying
she's a
Martha
human
Stewart.
Being, and she made a mistake, and now she's best friends with Snoop Dogg. That's what I want out of life.
How is insider trading? Not like almost every trade. It's
what
like
is
in the NFL.
Trading?
So it's like in the NFL, they say that, like, holding happens on every single play. It's just only called like 4% of the time. Insider trading, right?
Well, I don't know what insider
it's
trading
like,
is.
It's like, say I work for Caterpillar, the company that makes the tractors. And I'm like, hey, we are about to get a massive contract from Thailand to go clear debris. You, my buddy, invest in Caterpillar because our stock's about to go up. You can't do that.
Why?
I don't know. Watch Billions like once. Paul Giamatti is like, you can't do that.
I'm watching Suits right now, and it's great.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Are you watching Suits?
I watched like 3 seasons.
Love
Meghan Markle is one of the most beautiful people
she's
alive.
Gorgeous.
And what The Crown did to her.
Season 4.
What The Crown
okay,
did to
whatever,
her.
Whatever happened at
how
season four, the
her.
Hair and makeup in season 4. I mean, the budget.
I have no idea what's going on with Meghan Markle. And is it Prince Harry or Charles? I don't care. I know. No, I've avoided that entirely. I just like see a couple tweets. But if anybody is mean to Meghan Markle, shame on you. Most
talk
beautiful
about,
woman in the world.
Talk
love
about
suits.
Kraft Singles. Come on.
Kraft Singles.
I'm more
Kraft
of a Donna
Deluxe.
Girl, personally.
You're a what?
Donna girl. I like Donna.
Stop talking about suits. We got to talk about cheese.
I like Donna.
Kraft Singles are great. They melt really well. Sodium citrate is in there, yada, yada. But, like, it's not quite... It's in the uncomfortable middle ground between nacho cheese and proper American cheese.
That's
and I
fine.
Would prefer both nacho cheese
ugh.
And a good processed American
no
cheese that Kraft does make too. Kraft
no
Deli
way.
Deluxe.
No.
Higher percentage of cheese to other ingredients.
The taste of a Kraft Single is iconic. It is solitary. It is the only thing that gets me through the day of working at Mythical.
Do you hate your life that much that you need pasteurized processed
yeah.
cheese product?
Yeah.
Hey, listen, we all get through our day somehow. We all have our coping mechanisms, and that
mine's cheese.
Is what we can all agree on.
Mine's cheese.
If that doesn't get Nicole a Kraft sponsorship, what will?
I used to tell my parents I wanted to work for Kraft.
I used to say I wanted to work for Taco Bell.
That was the only way my parents let me go to culinary school. They said, oh, you're going to go work for Kraft? Okay, go.
Nicole, I want to do this podcast with you forever until the day I die.
Really?
But if you do end up leaving uh-huh. like this, mm-hmm. God, I hope to see you in like a white lab coat trying to make, I don't know, Chipotle flavored Kraft Singles.
We'll get there one day.
Ugh. And also,
but I do want to do this podcast still, even though I'm doing that too.
Oh,
can we, is there like a workaround?
Oh my, yeah, I'm
okay, my people will talk to your people.
I want Chipotle flavored American cheese now. Come on, that'd be so good.
So good.
Hi there, Josh and Nicole. This is Logan Ringham from Williamsburg, Virginia.
I love your name.
I am a chef in the area. I've been doing this for about 10 years.
I respect you.
And my general hot take is that despite the exponential growth in consumption of culinary content, there is still a really bad perception or misconception, really, of what it means to be a chef. Really romanticized. People get into it. They have a bad time when they find out, you know, the ugly parts of it. And I was just wondering what your guys' take on it is and why we can't seem to send the right message to the public. I'm aware you guys don't have the same grow up as an everyday working chef, but I'd love your input. Have you guys a nice day and
let the man finish.
Keep doing cool stuff.
I can't believe I even interrupt a recording. That's how much of an a-hole I am.
Bad.
God.
Bad. This is so interesting, and I feel like it could be its own podcast if we really wanted it to. But what was the question?
Well, okay, so he was saying how culinary content has exploded and it's romanticized the idea of being a chef. But an interesting thing he said is, how do we get out like the right message? Is the right message you want to get out, right? That's a great point. Chef Rick Bayless, who is somewhat controversial, he said some things about Mexican food that
don't agree
pissed
with
me off a little bit. He said LA doesn't know the true flavors of Mexico. It's a taco town. So yada yada. But he is a very accomplished chef.
Very talented.
Has opened tons and tons of restaurants. And he was talking about the show The Bear. The Bear on FX, which we love The Bear. Did you know it takes place in Chicago?
Do you know they drink out of deli cups?
And smoke cigarettes. But anyways, that show, people like Lily, who she spent the most time in professional kitchens in our little kitchenier club here. She was like, I can't watch that show because it gives me work anxiety.
I couldn't watch that show. I had to watch a few episodes with my hands covered behind my eyes because I felt it too. Yeah,
it shows how crazy a restaurant is, how almost all restaurants are doomed to fail. Mm-hmm. Working as chef, you're going to work long hours. It's going to be hard, backbreaking work and all this. And people were like, wow, that's such a realistic depiction. No one should get into this line of work. And then Rick Bayless came in, and I actually kind of liked his comments, despite me having a little bit of personal beef with him sometimes. He was like, we shouldn't, if you love this industry, sure, things should change about it, but like, don't try and drive people away from it just because it's hard. Like, it's a very rewarding industry. I love food and feeding people more than anything else. And we should all be working to try and change this. But I sort of agree with that. And again, I'm speaking from the outside looking in, I've worked in restaurants very briefly before going to media full time. However, most work is hell, right? Sitting in, I'm so lucky that we have this job.
Of course.
Where, you know, half of it is cooking, half of it is sitting in a desk writing emails, half of it is doing stuff like this. It's really great that I get to do that. But I have never been more mentally and physically tortured in my life than having to sit in a desk for 9-10 hours in a place that told me not to take my lunch break, and I was just staring at a screen, having to type things into it. I would so much rather peel and devein shrimp, right, for 12 hours. Right? Like, there are certain people, and a lot of people who work in restaurants are people who cannot exist in a desk job.
In a cubicle,
So when you're saying things like, it's, you know, hard backbreaking work, and it's, you don't make a lot of money, that's great, and I agree, but for some people, that is a much more rewarding way to live than just, I mean, the mental torture of sitting in a cubicle. I couldn't physically do that anymore if I tried. My brain does not function that way, right? It's sending the wrong reward messages to it.
Yeah, do you call your, I know your name is Mythical Chef Josh, but how do you feel when people say, oh, this is my friend Josh, he's a chef?
I had a really funny
incident. I had one too.
I was at the gym, and this dude was eyeballing me. I was like, you steal my weights. Anyways, he comes up to me and just goes, hey, are you a chef? And I go, yeah, why? I thought he recognized me from the internet. It turns out he did not. And he says, oh no, I saw your tattoos. I have a brand new tattoo of a leek on my forearm, by the way. And then he goes, oh, I'm also a chef. And he shows me his chef tattoos,
which
is really funny.
Oh my gosh, what is it? Is it a whisk?
I don't even remember what it was, honestly. I think it was kind of, it was very like, what do they call it, classic American style, cool tattoo style. But anyways, I was like, he was like, oh, where do you cook? And I was like, oh, no, here's the thing. If somebody who's not a chef asks me what I am, I'll just say chef. If somebody who is, or anybody in hospitality, I'll say I work in media. And so I'm not actually a chef. And this guy was. He worked at a Shout out to Mirabelle Wine Bar in the
Valley.
Oh,
cool. I know exactly
where
that is.
And I went in there for dinner and he cooked me a hell of a meal.
Nice.
So no, I don't. But what happened with you?
You know, in my circle, you know, a very insulated Persian Jewish community, yeah. Everyone's either a doctor, lawyer, engineer, or failure. So whenever people are like, oh, this is Nicole, she's a chef, I've learned to say only on the weekends.
That's funny.
Because yeah. I don't know what else to say because I'm definitely, I could not, toe-to-toe, I could not work at the same level, pace, clarity, and freedom that a chef in a restaurant does.
Yeah.
I'm very much in food media.
Yeah.
And the word chef is like auxiliary. It's like, it's not necessary to call me a chef because I don't feel like I'm a chef. I'm more of a producer, on-screen talent person. You know what I mean?
No, 100%.
Yeah, the word chef is just thrown around so loosely. It's like, if you're a line cook, are you a chef? I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah, and I think
yeah.
chef means boss in French, right?
Yeah.
Like a chef d'industrie is like a chief of yada yada.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. Some people are very protectionist about that term.
Yeah.
I'm whatever. They say most chefs want to be called a cook and most cooks want to be called a chef.
Sure.
Right?
I'm a producer.
I was faced with a crossroads in my career where I was offered a position at a very good restaurant in Los Angeles by a lovely chef. Shout out Chris Morningstar, who like really took me under his wing. He loved hiring athletes because athletes...
Of the work ethic? Yeah.
A lot of people are not cut out for the desk job life. And a lot of athletes need that intensity. And
yeah.
I am one of those people.
And a lot of military people.
Uh-huh. You know, order, structure, intensity,
yep.
and you know how to get stuff done and defaulting to hierarchy.
Sure.
I always wonder what would have happened if I would have chosen the other
sure.
path. And honestly, I would have chosen that path had I not been in a relationship at the time where I was doing a lot of things based on what this person wanted me to do or what I thought they wanted me to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I think I really would have loved restaurant life. It's very easy to say as somebody who's like, yeah, I played quarterback in high school, man. If I didn't blow out my elbow, I could have been out there on the Raiders, you know? But it's hard and it's grueling. And, you know, listen, every industry is really messed up.
Yeah, you could pick your grueling. You could pick your hard. You could, you know, be a chef. You could be a brain surgeon.
Yeah.
You could be a day laborer. There's so many things you can do. It's all going to be hard.
Just 100%.
Decide what kind of hard you want to do and what kind of challenges you're going to face. And food is just interesting because you need it to survive and sustain a life. But there's so much within that because not everyone's going to eat porridge and water.
Yeah, and it's only very recently sexy to be a chef, which is what our caller was talking about.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
That now it's one of these
it's a cool job. It's not, let me tell you, it's not always cool. It's cool when the cameras are on you, but when the cameras aren't on you, it's less than cool.
Yeah, and also like cop shows are generally about like, you got to solve a murder and there's people, mafia, hunting you down. Whereas like food shows are like, I'm having fun in my kitchen.
Yeah.
But no, that's a really interesting point. Yeah, we can talk about that for a long time.
We're probably going to talk about it on a podcast later. And we'll credit you if we do. Thanks, Logan.
Hey, yeah, this is Trevor. I got a bone to pick
Trevor.
with the sandwich place called Uncle Polly's.
I told him to call in, actually.
They put sesame seeds on top of their bread. And I don't really like it. I think it's kind of dumb. I don't like really a thick amount of sesame seeds being the first thing that hits my palate as I bite into a nice Italian sub. And it's really been ticking me off lately. So I'd like to get some opinions on it. And if there's any way that you can help me, that'd be awesome. Okay, thank you. Have a lovely day. Bye.
What do you mean? What does he mean help him?
I need you to know. He came up to me. He's like, I don't like the sesame seeds on the bread at Uncle Polly's. And I said, you should call the hotline and we'll talk about it on the podcast.
This is a great example. Anybody who wants to get into content creation, stop interacting with people in real life. Turn everything into content.
Stop.
Yeah, yeah. Stop. Nicole could have had a normal human conversation with Trevor.
No,
but
never.
That wouldn't have gone 5 minutes over our runtime on the podcast. And now here we are. Nicole, what do you think?
Just eat it.
Yeah, eat it, you weirdo. What do you mean help you? You want me to come scrape the sesame seeds
off
your
bun? Scrape your own sesame seeds off.
That's weird. Wow. Yeah, fine. No, Trevor, you bring me your Uncle Polly sandwich and I'll scrape the sesame seeds off myself. I do think he raises a good point.
I don't love the sesame seeds, but I don't mind it because the inside's so good.
Well, I want sesame seeds on the outside of every sandwich. Like anytime my bagel order is just sesame.
Do you like sesame seeds with your sushi?
Yeah.
Me too.
But sesame is a really interesting thing because it is used in it's used in Middle Eastern cooking. It's used in a lot of East Asian cooking. Also, there's, I believe, an indigenous form of sesame or similar called benne seeds in America.
Cool.
Sesame, I think, is a fantastic flavor. I love the crunch. I love that roasty, toasty flavor that it gets. I want sesame seeds everywhere. I do agree that it's a very strong, aggressive flavor to have on all of your subs.
I like it, though.
I just happen to love it.
I love it.
I love it. Well, Trevor, I hope that solved all your issues.
I know you're listening.
Y'all gleans that he doesn't listen to the damn podcast. He's never going to hear
He's going to know.
We're going to make him. Well, on that note, thank you so much for listening to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich. We got audio-only episodes every Wednesday, and the video drops on the Mythical Kitchen YouTube channel on Sunday.
That's right. And if you want to be featured on Opinions Like Casseroles, hit us up at 833-DOG-POD-1. The number again is 833-DOG. But
Nicole, you just said that like you were writing an essay to meet a word count in high school. You're like, henceforth, heretofore, we can even surmise hypothetically that.
What more, do you mean?
You're trying to stretch it out. This has already been a long ass podcast. Let's see if we can hit an hour for more Mythical Kitchen. Check out our other videos. We launch new episodes every week. We'll see y'all next time. I couldn't keep it up.